Money FM 89.3, best of prime time. Market View on Money FM 89.3.
Good afternoon, I'm Chua Tian Tian with your Market View. If you recall, a report last week showed Singapore racking up its best quarter ever for commercial property deals to defy a sharp region-wide decline. Now, deal volume here in Singapore climbed 74% to $5.3 billion. That's around 7.72 billion Sing dollars in the second quarter of this year. A record level for a single quarter. Now, the authors of the report, MSCI Real Assets, which is a part of index compiler MSCI, says the performance come as institutional investors piled in, adding that global investors have been part of the driving force. But what are the underlying reasons for that stellar performance? And for how long can this momentum sustain? For more, I speak to Benjamin Chow, head of Asia Real Assets Research at MSCI. Hi, Benjamin.
Hi, Tian Tian. Thanks for having me on the show today.
Great to have you on our show as well, Benjamin. First question, Singapore locked its strongest ever quarter for commercial real estate investments in Q2. Now, you mentioned that this was driven by global investors, but where do they come from? Why did they choose to invest in Singapore properties?
So we are referring to literally investors from all across the globe. And in Singapore, we tend to attract quite a diversified group of investors from various markets. So just to give an example, so far this year alone, we have seen investors from the US, from Germany, from Japan, from Hong Kong, from China, Indonesia and Australia. So, and also in terms of investor types, there's a good mix. So we have institutional investors like insurance funds or investment managers, and we also have more private wealth-backed type of players as well. So to answer the second part of the question, you know, what made Singapore stand out? I think the Singapore office market, which has been responsible for most of the activity this year, has been very attractive as fundamentals are good. And what we mean by this is that rental and occupancies are just starting to improve, while pipeline supply, which is the buildings that are being built, new buildings that are being built, this proportion remains quite modest, and especially so in Singapore CBD. So we all know that the biggest worry for office landlords worldwide has been the move towards flexible working. This trend has gained some traction, but nowhere near the levels that we're seeing in the US and certain parts of Europe. So investors are naturally more bullish about offices in the region as a whole, and particularly for markets like Singapore, where they can also be optimistic about occupier demand.
And you mentioned about commercial properties as well, right? So which locations are the most in demand and perhaps why?
So I think the Singapore CBD is one. Part of that reason might be we've had a lot of supply, you know, maybe over the past 10 years or so, and that supply has started to taper off a little bit. So the CBD office market is definitely something that investors have been targeting. I think the industrial market as well, rental growth there is also starting to look a little bit better. You know, it's kind of been stagnant for many years, but now is when they're starting to see a bit of an uptick. And obviously, the industrial properties are well spread out across Singapore as well. We've also seen some hotel investments, which is not surprising, you know, after 2 years of being mostly locked down and travel hasn't been doing too well. Now is when we're starting to see people trickling in a bit more, and so that has made hotels a bit more attractive.
So Benjamin, I just managed to digest a little bit from what you mentioned in our first question about the profile of the customers buying those real assets, right? To what extent do you see maybe Chinese investors coming in to buy more commercial properties here in Singapore? Has there been a sort of like a flight to Singapore in that sense?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I think a lot of the anecdotes that we're seeing is happening in terms of, you know, fund flows in an indirect sense. So anecdotally, we hear from, you know, some of our friends in the banking sector that yes, you know, some of the money has been channeled out of the country, but in a very indirect form. In terms of direct real estate investments, there haven't really been a huge surge of investment. But having said that, Singapore has been one of you know, Chinese investors' top investment targets for a long time. And even after the outflows from China have slowed, we still see a few big ticket investments. So Alibaba, you know, bought a big office tower, and now they're going to redevelop it. They announced it this year. And also specifically in 2022, we did see one Chinese group, which was Bright Ruby, buying an office tower in Raffles Place for almost around a billion Singapore dollars. So It hasn't been a significant outflow, but more of in keeping with a steady stream of investment by Chinese investors in our market.
And I just want to maybe take a step back and take a look at the overall property market in Singapore, right? Overall transaction volume remains at a healthy 53% year-on-year growth in Q2. But the question is, how long can this growth momentum sustain, especially when we're expecting more interest rate hikes by the Fed?
Yeah, very good question. The answer is not long, but we're talking about, investment volumes. We're not talking about prices, right? And the velocity at which or the speed at which properties are trading, this is very cyclical. It can go up and it can go down very quickly. So we tend to pay attention to volumes because usually when a lot of people are buying, this tends to mean that eventually prices will go up. But having said that, even if investment grew at 0% year on year, but it starts from a very high base, prices can still continue to go up, and that's something like what we are seeing in South Korea. So there's good reason to expect that commercial real estate market in Singapore will hold up quite well, even though interest rate hikes are part of the story behind why momentum is slowing down across the region. For Singapore, it's a little bit different because the market here is exceptionally liquid, which means that the frequency with which assets are traded is very high, and there are a lot of many big global investors that are active in the market. And why this is important is because some of these big global investors do not play by the same rule book. They have deep balance sheets, which means that they can buy buildings entirely with cash without any borrowing. And that's one way that they can get around the interest rate hikes. So this pool of investors targeting Singapore, and Singapore is, in some senses, we are seen as a safe haven kind of destination, right? So that's one of the reasons why investment here hasn't slowed, but it's actually gone from strength to strength even during this period of uncertainty.
So when you mentioned that it will the growth momentum that we see currently will not sustain for too long, what are you expecting? How long is not too long?
Yeah, I think South Korea gives us a good idea of what's happening because actually South Korea raised their interest rates at the end of last year. So the slowdown already started to happen in Q4, but we didn't see a plunge in investment. Instead, what we saw is a tapering off. So growth went from, like 50, 80, 100% year on year, and it started to taper off, getting slower and slower. And as at Q2, momentum was flat. But having said that, Q2 of last year was already a very active period. And so Q2 of just this year just means that South Korea managed to match what it did last year. And that is something that we might expect to see for Singapore as well. There are only that many office buildings and, industrial buildings that people can buy in Singapore. And once everyone has bought all the buildings, they're going to be likely to hold on to it for a while. So we will expect, volumes to slow at some point in time, but that isn't necessarily a sign of weakness in the market.
If you're just tuning in, we are now speaking to Benjamin Chow, Head of Asia Real Assets Research at MSCI. Benjamin, I want to take a look at the broader Asian market as well, because investments in the broader APAC region declined by 24% on year, with China marking the biggest contraction in activity as a result of the ongoing property crisis. When do you expect China's property market to show signs of stabilization, given that the central government is actively stepping in to support developers?
Aha, so this is a tricky question. The short answer is we don't know. The long answer is it will happen at some point, but it's hard to know how long because in my view, the Chinese government is essentially thinking very long term. They're not just focused on short-term macroeconomic cycles, but they are thinking of how to set their country up for prosperity in 50, 100, or 200 years' time, right? So for the property sector specifically, the situation, it changes from week to week. At this point in time, it's true that the government has become a bit more open in terms of providing support to the real estate ecosystem. Earlier this year, it was done in a, like a hush-hush kind of manner. There was a bit of maneuvering via the state-owned enterprises, and then they tried to get the banks to step in. But at the moment, it's more all guns blazing. They've announced a big bailout fund, and they have been, much more active in terms of the measures that they're taking. Having said that, if you look at the stock market, there doesn't seem to be a huge amount of optimism just yet. And that might be because even if the market doesn't sink any further, it doesn't mean that we can immediately expect to see a recovery as well, right? Real estate powers the Chinese market in many ways, in fact, more ways than it does for other markets around the world. Many of the government, the provinces rely on land sales as a source of revenue. So if developers are suddenly paying a lot less for land, you can imagine that it will have some impact on how they fuel their growth and their activities. But I think for the moment, if we just have a period of stability, that should be the first step in terms of what's needed to restore confidence before we can actually start to talk about a recovery.
And I also want to take a look at all the other APEC markets. Which markets stood out for you this quarter and why?
I think one market that has kind of gone under the radar is Japan. And that's largely because, you know, Japan is at a very, very interesting point in the cycle, right? It's gone against all the odds. It continues to maintain low interest rates. Financing is affordable, it's available, it's, you know, and the cost of borrowing is very close to zero or sub 1%. But I think more importantly, the prices of real estate in Japan outside the residential sector, they haven't really skyrocketed in the same way that we've seen in a lot of other markets like US and, you know, Australia. And partly that's due to Japan's more stable economy. But also, I think during times of uncertainty, and now is definitely a time of uncertainty, right? Investors tend to flock towards certain markets that provide them with stable returns. And Japan, with its low interest rate environment, the risk of prices falling is less. So all in all, it to me, is the complete package for what you would be looking for as you approach a global economic slowdown. I think another market is South Korea, and that's a market that's been growing very steadily over the past 2 years. We were looking at something like 20%, 20 plus percent price growth per year. And this is driven by structural factors. So just like Singapore, you know, the office market has been doing well, rentals have been going up and vacancy has been low. But also, I think appetite for South Korean commercial real estate as an asset class is still growing. So these tailwinds have helped the market to stay afloat. And again, as I mentioned, you know, they actually raised the interest rates last year. So, you know, they could give us a glimpse of what might lie ahead for the rest of the region down the road.
And I would assume that prices in Japan, given that they're relatively stable, and I assume that for residential wise, it is more of like a renter's market there. People rent for a very, very long time. Is it a good time to invest in real estates directly in Japan at this point?
So in Japan, it's actually a mix. They do have residential for sale and they also have residential for rent. The rental apartment market is more, you tend to have a wider variety of investors, right? You know, some of these big global institutional investors are the ones who are active in the market. But also you have the Japanese REITs and you have a lot of domestic Japanese corporations. So unfortunately, at MSCI, we're not in the business of providing direct investment advice. But what we can say is whatever we see in the data. And I do think that we've seen a lot of interest from institutional investors in the residential for rent market in Japan, largely because of the stable returns. And, you know, even if the returns are low, right, like 4%, but if your borrowing cost is near to zero, there's still a very healthy margin for you to make money. And of course, if you expand that and you buy a whole bunch of residential assets, then I think the stability of returns is definitely something that investors are looking for, particularly in the next 12 months. So the outlook is definitely much brighter for Japan compared with some of the other markets around the world.
Mm. Which are the APEC markets and asset types that are more undervalued, that are more of interest right now?
So I think the industrial sector is one where prices have really gone through the roof last year. Now, obviously, that is because of the long-term structural trends, right? E-commerce is going up, warehousing is becoming more large-scale, data centers are becoming more large-scale. And with that, there has been, you know, increases in the amounts of, in terms of rentals, and also in terms of the capital values or the prices of assets. So that has been one sector that has really gone up significantly last year. And there is this sensing, you know, around the world that that market is definitely slowing a lot more this year. So the question is, you know, will values actually drop? Now, obviously, the answer will depend from market to market. But if you look at some of the other sectors, since you were asking, you know, are there asset types that are undervalued? I would say on a relative basis, if you look at the more traditional real estate sectors, so office and retail, I think you will find that there is relative value over there, given that prices of these assets haven't surged as much last year. Obviously, you know, given the challenges faced by office landlords and retail landlords, more people are doing their work online, more people are doing their shopping online as well. So if you are investing, you will have to be super selective about which assets you acquire.
And Ben, just before we go, what is your outlook for the APEC real estate market for the rest of this year?
I think APEC is in a relatively good position. You know, objectively, we see that most of the world is slowing down. But in the region, there are markets that are at a different point in the cycle. So most, you know, we're kind of expecting a peaking of most markets, most mature markets across the world, US, UK, Australia. But there are other markets in APAC, like Singapore, for example, where, you know, the peak is probably a little bit later. And then you have Japan, where, you know, instead of talking about peaking, we're talking about maybe, you know, the market is just starting to take off. And then you have a market like Hong Kong, where prices have fallen significantly. So if you are a daring investor, if you're an investor that, you know, really adopts a regional or even a global approach, you will find opportunities for counter-cyclical bets in this part of the world. But in terms of when the region as a whole will recover, I think it's safe to say that after 2021, which was a record year by miles, it's hard to see how this year is going to match up given all the challenges on the horizon. So the earliest that, you know, we think activity could pick up will most likely be 2023. But even then, it would depend on the challenges that we're looking at. You know, will inflation be curbed? Will economic sentiment pick up? Will energy prices, you know, not go on another roller coaster? So we had some good news from the US inflation data in July. So if we can get more of that and more consistent good news, then we could see the bottom sooner.
Thank you very much. That was Benjamin Chow, head of Asia Real Assets Research at MSCI.
Before acting on the information on MoneyFM, please consider if it's suitable for your own investment objectives, financial situation, and risk tolerance.